Jonah Carey joins us. Jonah Carey of everything, including here at the Sportsnet. Pleasant good morning, Jonah. Thanks for getting up early.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
It's going good. We're talking about Troy Tulowitzki because we have decided that the Blue Jays offense is kind of stalling through Tulo at the moment because the four guys ahead of him are all hitting and none of the four guys behind him are hitting. Kevin Barker says that there is a possibility that the Jays offense could run through Tulo, and I think he's right if Troy heats up. And we were just talking about how his line drive rate is a career low 4.8%, his hard hit ball rate 24% below his or it's at 24%. His career rate is 34%. He's only 31. He can't be falling off a cliff. What do you think's going on?
Small sample size. Next question.
It can't be though, because we're 57 games though. 57 games isn't a small sample size.
57 games actually is a small sample
size. Yes, it is. In fact,
I wrote about this. I wrote about this last year at Grantland. May it rest in peace. No, sorry, it's more than a year ago at Grantland when it used to exist. If you just Google Jonah Carey and something to the effect of when can we trust the numbers, and it talks about when different stats stabilize. And you know, we don't really have a good feel for a lot of things after 57 games. That's a third of a season. You know, there are a lot of stats that take about 300 plate appearances, which is roughly half a season, and some take 400 or 500. I do think that it's unrealistic to expect Tulo to hit the way that he did in Colorado. But if he's healthy, I think that we're going to see better than this. As you cited, you know, the line drive rate and the hard hit rate, those are concerns. I mean, you know, normally you would say, oh, look at his batting average on balls in play, which is basically, for people you guys know, but for people who don't know, is basically what happens if it's not a home run, it's put in play. Where does it go? And Tulo's at 175, league average about 300.
Right.
So, you know, normally you say, wow, that's not it. But you're right. I mean, if he's not making hard contact, you're not necessarily going to get a lot of that. But I'm not necessarily worried either at this point. I will say this, though. This whole idea of debating, you know, who's going to be the leadoff man, and, oh, it's Pilar, and then it's Saunders, and you know, kind of the smart people are agitating for Tulo. I've said this before. I just put my best guys at the top of the lineup. I would go like Donaldson, Bautista, and Encarnacion. That would be my top three in the lineup.
But don't you want to not guarantee a 40 home run guy that one at bat where there's not going to be anybody on base?
Well, to some extent, sure. But on the other hand, Donaldson gets on base a whole lot and hits a lot of singles and doubles too, and that sets the table for Bautista and Encarnacion. So, you know, it's fine that way. I don't really have a problem with it. Ultimately, you're getting him more at-bats over the course of the season. Let's say you have Donaldson, and let's say he's your, you know, in this case, he's your two-hitter. But if you made him your three or your four or whatever, every time you go down one spot in the order, you lose 18 plate appearances.
Right.
So, yes, there's some, you know, RBI situations or what have you. But on the other hand, you're getting him more reps during the course of the season. I'm all for that.
Jonah, to further that, everybody says hitting's contagious. Blue Jays 1-9, 164 strikeouts and 556 at-bats. Is it contagious? Can they get out of that? Or is it like you just said, it's early sample size?
Well, I mean, they do strike out a fair bit. I'm going to try to look this up as I'm talking to you. Let's see if I can pull this off. But I'm pretty sure the Jays struck out a fair bit last year. Let's take a look here. The Jays were... No, actually, the Jays did not strike out a lot last year. I'm sorry about that. They had the fifth fewest strikeouts in all of baseball last year. So, yep, that is a little bit different. That's certainly true. Tulo, of course, has struck out a lot. He's one of the big ones. But then again, you look at the guys who started off slow. I mean, you know, really, Pilar hasn't hit. Colabello hasn't hit. I just think there are a lot of guys. Russell Martin has been absolutely awful, and I love Russell Martin. But, you know, that's just the way it goes right now. And I don't know about contagion, but it just happens to be the case that three or four guys are not doing well, you know, via the strikeout in other ways. It's just you're not seeing much power. Let's see. Goins is hitting 212 with a 255 on base. Martin 130, Colabello 069. You know, you've just got guys up and down who are not really hitting very much, and I think that will rectify itself as the season goes on because these guys are better than that.
Right. There's no way that Tulowitzki, Martin, and Pilar finish a season hitting a combined 173. It's just not going to happen.
If they did, then they would go lose their jobs and they'd be replaced by somebody else. The point is that they won't. The Jays, one way or another, won't have guys that bad. They'll either, you know, figure it out, or they'll just mysteriously disappear from the roster and they'll get replaced by better players. I mean, this is not a team that's going to sit back idly and let that happen because it's a contending ball club.
To that end, today they signed Michael Bourne to a minor league deal, according to reports from Ken Rosenthal, who is, what, your teammate now? Oh, maybe not. I don't know. I can't keep track.
Sort of.
Yeah, sort of. MLB Network, right? I'll give you that.
I occasionally do some stuff on MLB Network, so sure, let's go with that.
There you go. Michael Bourne is a guy who kind of did fall off a cliff at age 30, and the Atlanta Braves and Cleveland Indians both decided that it's better to pay him not to play than to have him around. For me, this is a case of freely available talent who they don't have to pay, who may well wind up being an upgrade at the very least on the fourth outfield spot, so why not?
Yeah, I don't think he's an upgrade. I think he's done. He doesn't field well. He doesn't hit well. Michael Bourne does nothing for me, but it's worth a try. I mean, he costs literally nothing to sign somebody to a minor league deal, so you go ahead and do it.
You don't think he's an upgrade on Ezekiel Carrera?
Well, maybe, but I don't know. I would be surprised if the Jays couldn't do better than that, either on the open market or in AAA or somewhere. Like, I just think that this is a placeholder ultimately, and that they'll go out and within the next few weeks, find somebody better than Bourne or Carrera. Neither of these guys do anything for me, and I don't think either belongs in the Major League roster.
Wow.
How does he get done at 30?
Just happens that way. I mean, the thing about Bourne is he got that big contract because he had one really nice season where he hit, but he's never been a really good hitter. You know, the thing about him was he was fast, and he could run down fly balls. And at a certain point, those skills start to erode. Speed is a skill that goes away quickly. You know, power can sometimes develop a little bit later, but of course, Michael Bourne weighs about 170 pounds, so that's never going to happen. So you're left with a situation where the guy needs to evolve. If you have like Ricky Henderson or something like that, he's so supernaturally talented that if he's not stealing 90 bases a season, that's not a problem. He's Ricky Henderson. But you get into these, you know, little guys who run and have range and so forth. As soon as that speed starts to go, they're almost useless ball players. I don't dislike Michael Bourne. I'm just telling you how baseball usually goes with that skill set.
Jonah, when the season started and I looked the American League East, I said first thing, American League East is back. And now the Blue Jays have went through some of the American League East, and I may be scratching my head rethinking that. Where do you think the American League East is now that we played 17 games? Do you think it's back or not?
I mean, every team in the division has flaws. I mean, the Jays are either the best team or co-best along with Boston. But Boston's been having some major problems. Price is not pitching well so far, which, you know, people have been on R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey, last time I checked, has a lower ERA than Price does.
Yep, so, and Chris Archer.
That's been kind of... Yeah, well, and Archer's been really struggling a lot, which is weird, and it goes back to the end of last season. So, yeah, you know, you've got those aces struggling. The Orioles, of course, are off to a pretty hot start, cooled off a little bit after that undefeated start, but they've got some talent. Yankees have that monster bullpen. My God, I mean, I don't know what this team is going to become, but if you just like baseball and can get over hatred of the Yankees, then I get that that's difficult. But Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller are just, like, I cannot think of it. You know, you talk about the Nasty Boys bullpen or some of these 1-2 punches or whatever. It's preposterous. They're striking out two-thirds of the batters that they face this season, and they don't even have Chapman yet. I mean, that's going to be absolutely awesome. The question is, what's with the rest of the roster, which is the lineup is shaky, A-Rod is looking old, you know, so forth. So it's one of those things where the division has some strength. It'll be a competitive division, but there's no team that you could sort of look at and say, oh, wow, yeah, this is the team to really look out for. I just don't see that one club right now.
Well, with Jonah Carey, it's Baseball Central. Mike Wilner in for the ailing Jeff Blair, talking about, well, all kinds of things, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. And I kind of want to take a hard left turn, Jonah, if you don't mind. Saw your column yesterday on CBS about Prince, and I dug it, if you will. So I want to talk about that because yesterday Prince passing away at the age of 57. We're losing a lot of great icons of whatever, whether it's music like Prince and David Bowie, whether it's Gary Shandling in the comedy world. It's been a rough year in 2016. But I like the departure from the hardcore sports because I think sports radio and sports writing, it's more than about just baseball, hockey, football, basketball and stuff, because we're all products of pop culture and we kind of get the opportunity every once in a while to talk about this. And I remember when I was, I don't know, 11, 12 years old, when 1999 came out, and you think, is this some sort of pseudo Boy George, another gender bending guy, shock looking for attention? And then you listen to the music and it's like, no, thank you. This is unbelievable. Share some of your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with you about the sports talk radio thing, by the way. One of my favorites is Mitch Melnick in Montreal, and I mean, you know, he might open a segment with a 5-minute Dylan song. I mean, that's just kind of how it goes. So completely agree. There's all kinds of ways to talk about sports. sports, and there are very few people that only like sports. I mean, typically we have a lot of interests, and even if you're not a gigantic Prince fan, I think it's very much like Bowie, where you acknowledge he's such an influence. You know, let's put his own music aside for a second, which is tough to do. You know, he wrote Nothing Compares to You, Sinead O'Connor, which was one of the iconic songs of the 90s.
He wrote Manic Monday.
Yeah, Manic Monday. Chaka Khan's career owes a lot to Prince. He collaborated with Madonna. I mean, there's just all these people that really owe a lot to him, and he did such a great job. And the guy shreds. He's 5'2", 120. He comes on stage, and he just shreds. And I put some videos up embedded within the CBS Sports post. And it basically, you know, you look at some of the stuff that he did. That Super Bowl performance in 2007 was absolutely unreal. It was raining, and so he comes out and he's performing Purple Rain, and you just want to pass out. It's so amazing. And then I think the one that kills me the most, 2004, he's one of the eight people actually being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, along with George Harrison, comes on stage, Tom Petty, Steve Winwood, Jeff Lynne, Harrison's son, all these people are out there, you know, some really significant people in rock, and the song is kind of going along. They're playing While My Guitar Gently Weeps, great song. Playing. About 3.5 minutes in, Prince starts and he does a solo. And I mean, these people might have disappeared. Tom Petty, you know, Steve Winwood, some rock legends, and he just destroys the stage for 2.5 minutes. Nobody cares about anything else other than Prince. Finishes the song, flips the guitar over his head, like Batista style. For all we know, the guitar never even came down. And just kind of, you know, smirks, and that's about it. That's the end of it. And it's just, who has that kind of swagger, talent, influence. He was just really amazing, and very much like David Bowie, which I talked about in the story too. There's this perception of what's cool and what's not. I think we all get caught up in that. Probably starts in middle school, junior high, whatever. And you know, you look at both of these guys, and what they said was kind of find your own way, find your own cool. You talked about gender bending. I mean, that was Bowie too. He didn't really care about convention and all that. And that's, you know, brave and cool. And he, you know, both of these people said, just do your own thing, live your own life. And that is cool in itself. And I think that's a lesson to take to heart. In addition to talent, when you make a contribution to society that way and you make people feel good about their own existence, what more can you do?
Yeah. And you hope that it does catch on. I mean, it's been, I don't know, almost 40 years since Bowie and 30 since Prince. And we're still kind of dealing with people not feeling free to live their own lives and be their authentic selves. But certainly when you talk about like a musical icon who performs and, like you says, just goes out and destroys maybe the greatest guitar. He might have been the greatest guitarist ever, who goes out in like purple lace wearing 8-inch platform boots.
Yeah.
And he's not only that, you know, not only the effeminate way he dressed and the makeup and whatever, but the fact that he was also just this, I mean, I'm not quite sure how to say it on the radio, but I mean,
he was a BAMF is what he was.
He really was. really was. And you know, the women that were around him and the that wanted him, and you know, he was almost a sexual icon just as much.
Absolutely he was. No question about all that stuff. I think the guitar point needs to be emphasized. During that Super Bowl performance, he played 7 songs, and one of them was All Along the Watchtower, which is one of the greatest songs ever recorded, of course written by Dylan and played beautifully by Hendrix. And Prince overshadows Dylan and Hendrix. And I want you to think about that for a second, because, again, maybe you're not a specific Dylan or Hendrix fan, but, I mean, we all acknowledge that those are two of, I don't know, the 10 probably greatest American musicians that have lived. Well, unless we get into blues, that's a whole other story because that's been marginalized. But anyway.
Talking about rock and roll, you know, right now.
Rock and roll, yeah. And so, you know, then you get Prince and he's just, you know, he just probably plays it a little bit better than they do. And it is exceptional and really speaks to that influence. Sexual icon, absolutely. Some of these songs, like, it's just, go listen to Darling Nikki. Darling Nikki, first of all, is a very graphic song.
Yep.
But man, that thing rocks. You're just like, oh my God, I'm in some kind of mood. I don't know what kind of mood it is, but I want to listen to this song. And there's just all this great stuff. His catalog is incredible. You know, and he would just come out and kill it wherever he was. He was going to do a tour now. I mean, it was going to happen currently. And what he was going to do was no guitar. He was going to go on stage, be on the piano, just him and the piano, and play a show. And the plan was to just basically never do a complete song and just kind of shift from one to the other, almost like a medley, which can be contrived and whatever. But when Prince does it, you're like, no, this is amazing. And that was the thing about him, too. You weren't allowed to record his concerts. There's nothing on YouTube. So if you were to go to a Prince concert, if he was still alive, and you went to one today in whatever, Milwaukee or Toronto or anywhere, even if you saw Prince in 1985 and 1995 and 2005, there's no way it would be the same show. It would have been totally different than anything you ever saw. And how many musicians can say that?
Okay, before we let you go, I wouldn't be a Friday show without me asking about the Cubs. Jake Arrieta yesterday threw his second no-hitter of his career. Mm-hmm. The Cubs are 12-4. Are they the best team in baseball, and is he the best pitcher in baseball?
Yes, maybe. The Cubs are the best team in baseball. I picked them at the beginning of the year to win the World Series, which, by the way, the World Series, the playoffs are random, so that's a guess. But I expected the Cubs to have the best record in the league. I write an over-under column every year. We talk about win-loss record and whether a team's going to go over-under. I think the number that I ended up wagering on was 90.5 wins. And I laughed and I said, oh, good. I'm looking forward to adding an addition to my house at the end of this year. And so that will be happening as well. So I'm excited about that. And, you know, ultimately you get past that. And this is a great ball club. And they lost Kyle Schwarber. You know, this has almost been overlooked. Schwarber had a chance to be a 25-30 home run guy with like 90 walks, which is very valuable. Poor man's Jim Thome, basically. And he's out, and they didn't miss a beat because they had built up so much depth. Dexter Fowler fell into their laps at the beginning, at the end of the offseason, and he's been unbelievable at the top of the lineup. And then you've got just so much depth. You know, they added Hayward and Zobrist. Suddenly this is a good defensive team. They were an okay defensive team last year. They're good now. Their bullpen is incredibly deep. You know, the rotation, they do have Lester, they do have guys to back the rotation. They have bullpen guys who can be stretched out into starters. Their bench is good. If they need to make a trade, they could trade Baez or Soler or something like that and go get more help. I mean, just up and down the organization, this is years of good drafting, good trading, and so forth. Like I said, anybody can be beaten in the playoffs. I'm talking about the Cubs, blah, 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 and this is, you know, we're the Toronto radio station. I'm not saying if the Jays face the Cubs in the World Series, they can't win. All I'm saying is in the regular season, the Cubs are just going to beat up on tools, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
On a scale of silly to you've got to be kidding me, and you can throw an expletive in there if you want, how can you rate the fact, the two facts that, A, Jake Arrieta has thrown two no-hitters since his last loss, and two, in his last loss, the other guy threw a no-hitter.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? He's really been incredible, and, you know, I didn't answer the second question, so I'll do that now. You know, it's a funny thing about how we define best, and I got asked this question in a different city a couple days ago, was a Trout versus Harper question. Who's the best player in baseball, Trout or Harper? And if you think that Harper's the best player, that's fine. You know, the numbers were there last year, and certainly they're there at the beginning of this year. But the question is, how quickly do you turn over the throne? And Clayton Kershaw was very good last year. By some advanced stats, he was about as good as Arrieta. You know, maybe you can give Arrieta a slight edge, but Kershaw's been the best guy for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, Trout for 4. So does somebody supplant somebody else because they have one good year and 5 starts? Like, what is the cutoff? So I'm not ready to give it to Arrieta yet because Kershaw's just been doing it year after year, and it's still absolutely elite. His numbers might be a little behind Arrieta this year, but he's still dominant and spectacular. So to me, it's Kershaw, but I'm willing to make the case for Arrieta at number 2. I think that's a fair one to go for.